Welcome to the Edu All-Stars Podcast.
Hey guys, and welcome to the 76th episode of Edu All-Stars. My name is Todd Nesloni, and you can find me on Twitter at TechNinjaTodd.
And my name is Chris Kessler. You can find me on Twitter at IamKessler. Just want to welcome everyone back, middle of December, and hope you're enjoying the show. If you could leave us some feedback and comments on the blog, it would be much, much appreciated.
And as you listen to this week's episode, we encourage you to tweet out using the hashtag EduAllStars. We love seeing the conversations and hearing about the things that stick out to you. We are really excited about this week's guest. It is Peter DeWitt, a former teacher and principal who now speaks, trains, and writes on creating inclusive school environments, digital leadership, and connected learning. So thank you, Peter, for coming on with us today.
Well, thanks for having me, guys.
So the best place we always like to start is just kind of hearing about your journey into education. So how did that happen for you?
In a very odd way. I was really never meant to be a teacher. I was a former struggling learner. I was a guy that was retained in elementary school, and my dad died when I was in fifth grade. And I'm the youngest of five and the first to go to college. I actually graduated fourth from last in my class. So, and then I fell out of two community colleges, so I had a pretty stellar academic history. But luckily I was a long distance runner, and I had a coach who was really good, and he told me to go into the Learning Assistance Center, and I would say things changed from then on. I was working at an after school program for kids, and it was just such a cool experience. So I ended up going into education. I got accepted to a local university called the College of St. Rose in elementary education. Then I started teaching at a private school for boys for about a year and a half, and then I moved down to Poughkeepsie, New York, and I taught first grade in Poughkeepsie. And I ended up teaching for 11 years, and then I had done my leadership degree during that time, something that I also never thought I would do, which was become a principal. And I've been a principal for the past 8 years at Post McKill Elementary School, which is a K-5 school in Avril Park, New York, about 10 miles east of Albany. And then last year, I wrote a book for Corwin Press called Dignity for All, Safeguarding LGBT Students, which was based on my doctoral work. And I had a really good relationship with Corwin. They flew me out to California, and when I was out there doing some work with Jim Popham, who had been at UCLA for a really long time, they asked me if I would start working with John Hattie. So I ended up taking a leave of absence, and for the past year, I have been working with John Hattie. I created a book series for Corwin called the Connected Educator Series. It was just a list of about six ideas that I thought they should cover, and I was talking to Mike Soule, the president of Corwin, and they seemed to like it and asked me if I would actually put a prospectus together. So I found the guys to write the book, and Connected Educator Series was published in August and September, and all in all, by the time 2016 hits, there'll be 20 books in the series, so wow. It was a cool experience, something that I never ever thought would happen, but I just, you know, I took the opportunity to talk to Mike about what I thought a good book series would look like, a short-form book series. As a busy principal, I know what it's like to try to read some long philosophical book that you never have time for, and I know teachers are busy too, so I wanted something super practical. Besides that, for the past 3.5 years, I've written a blog for Education Week called Finding Common Ground, so that's been kind of cool. And I ended up resigning from my position in April, so I'm working as an independent still, but I mostly work with Corwin on John Hattie's work. So I was in New Zealand in March with John. And then we went through London, Denmark, and Sweden, and I'm working with Jim Knight, who is an expert in instructional coaching, so I train instructional coaches around the country, and I'm working with Russ Claudia, who does a lot on student voice, and then I do my own work on flipped leadership and creating a positive school climate.
Now, one of the things you mentioned there that I thought was kind of cool and interesting was that you worked at a private all-boys school and then worked at a public school. What was one of the biggest differences you saw between those two?
You know, I loved my time in the private school because it was, I certainly didn't grow up going to private school, so that was a very big difference for me to see kids in uniform and all that kind of stuff. But the sense of community that they had at the school was really awesome. And I really loved that the people who worked together, the teachers, you know, just they were really close-knit and stuff. when I moved down to Poughkeepsie, you know, I actually wrote about this. I wrote a blog last month for Finding Common Ground called Two Reasons Why Teachers Have It Tougher Than You Think. And I talked about the fact that because of my own experiences, I think I kind of walked in with a chip on my shoulder, like nobody could understand the things I had gone through when I was a kid and all that stuff. When I started working in Poughkeepsie, I met a lot of kids that had it a whole lot tougher than I ever did. And it was very much more diverse than anything that I had been used to. So for me, it was there were a lot of those kind of things. I don't want to say culture shock because that wouldn't be the correct way of saying it, but it was definitely a lot more diversity. First grade was just a whole different ballgame. You know, when you've got 30 first graders, it's just like you're the plate spinner because you're, you know, keeping one play in the air and you've got to run around. I mean, that was kind of crazy too. But, you know, I would say that would be kind of the biggest difference was just the diversity and the – but not just racial diversity but economic diversity that you were dealing with and not always having the proper school supplies and those kind of things.
It's funny that your story that you talked about at the beginning being a poor student. We've actually heard that story many times throughout the 75 episodes we've done, including myself. I was a poor student. I don't know how Todd was, but I know Todd did not want to be an administrator, and he was just kind of called into doing that. And so it's not always like the goody-two-shoes. Now, we've seen the other side of that, too. We have seen GT students that, you know, always knew they were going to be a teacher or whatever, but it's interesting that a lot of us have kind of have shared similar backgrounds and everything.
What I've always found, because I mean, I was very embarrassed about my story for many years. I didn't share any of that kind of stuff until actually I became a school principal when I was a little bit more vocal about that stuff. I think, you know, I had really good teachers, but I was also one of those kids that I was never going to be in, you know, I was never going to be in the great classes. I was never expected to do really well, kind of thing. And I think that that's why I may have gotten into education, because I thought I could reach the kids that were more like me. And maybe that's why, you know, you and others have gotten into education as well, because, you know, there are a lot of kids around like us that need something different. And you've got an ability to be able to touch that with them because you understand where they're coming from.
Mm-hmm. When you had to make the decision to leave the school building and go work for, you know, private industry, what were some of the kind of the pros and cons you went through with that decision?
Would I be able to eat? You know, steady paycheck, that kind of. I went through a lot of emotions because I loved my Post and Kill was awesome. It was just you know, we went through some hard times. We went through budget cuts. We consolidated schools. I absorbed a whole population. We've seen school teacher layoffs and all that stuff. We had gone through a lot of hard times in 8 years, but it was just an awesome place. And from the kids to the teachers to the parents as well, I mean, it wasn't always rosy, but by the time I left, that was a hard decision for me. You know, I took the leave in December. I would tell you that right up until probably the end of April, because I had to give my final answer on May 1st, it was still very difficult. Like, I always just thought I would be in a school building for the rest of my life, and I was okay with that because I loved where I was. The opportunity to work with John personally was pretty amazing, and Corwin, you know, creating a book series, doing all those things in education that I never even saw coming, I never even thought would be a part of my resume. There was something about it that I just felt like I had to take a step and just give it a try and see what, like, really be a risk taker, because I put myself through all my degrees. So it's like, you know, it was a hard decision, but I had a lot of support at home. And it's funny because I would say that it didn't hit me hard until September when I was on Facebook and people started posting pictures of their kids going back to school on the first day. The first day was always like my favorite day of the year. And that's when it hit me that I was like, I'm not going back. So that was kind of hard. You know, now I have – it's great. I leave for San Diego on Tuesday. I'm going to be in San Diego, and then I've got to go up to Thousand Oaks, so I'm going to be gone for the next week and a half. I've been able to travel around the world, which has been really cool. The freedom to be able to write is really great. You know, I don't have to – it's not like I had to hold what I was saying before, but sometimes with my blog I can be pretty outspoken. I've definitely taken some heat in the U.S., but taken some heat in New York State. I think having the freedom to know that I can just, I own my voice. I can, you know, those kind of things were kind of nice. So there are definitely, you're right, there are definitely pros and cons. I have more flexibility in my schedule than I ever have, but the traveling piece is not always glamorous either. I think people think you get, you know, first class seating and you fly somewhere really awesome and you're, you know, staying on the ocean and you're having drinks at night in Malibu, and it's just, you know, it's not always that cool. Sometimes it's really hard because you're only in a place for maybe less than 24 hours. So the traveling piece has been something to get used to as well. But meeting new people, and I honestly chalk it up to Twitter, because I tend to be a pretty shy guy. And so I used to go and speak at conferences and just never, I wouldn't always like go and meet up with people because I really didn't know people at all. Twitter in the past, I would say 2.5 years, has changed my life that way, because, you know, people may read the blog or they're people that I connect with on Twitter. Now when I go somewhere, it's just awesome because it doesn't matter where you are in the world. You can meet people that you've either talked to on Twitter or something like that. So it's kind of, it's made it a much more personal connection where you can build relationships, which has been awesome.
So you mentioned being the series editor for the Connected Educator series of books. And the books seem to have really taken off. I mean, I see people talking about them all the time. We've had a lot of the authors actually on Edu All Stars at different times. But how did that idea come about? And what is it like being the editor of those? I mean, is it like you just get super pumped every time you catch another one? And you're like, oh, I can't wait for people to read this one. I mean, what's that like?
It's, you know what? It's kind of, I've always had the philosophy that I need to pay it forward. Honestly, when I you know, I was sitting eating dinner, having a glass of wine in L.A. with Mike, the president of Corwin, and I said, you know, I write a blog. We can write something today that people can put into practice tomorrow. I really feel like publishers are putting out books that are way too long and principals and teachers are busy. So when they came back to me a few weeks later and said, so give me your, like, 6 best ideas. I had been talking about flipped leadership, so I obviously wanted that to be one, but you know, I started hearing about branding your schools and just like how to connect with students who have only grown up with computers around them. So I brainstormed like 15 different ideas, and we really looked at the best 6, and I knew because I had been friends with them through Twitter or reading their blogs. So, you know, Spike Cook and I had a conversation at NAESP in Baltimore a couple of years ago, and he had asked me about writing books because he had seen Dignity for All. And I reached out to him and said, listen, I know you wanted to write a book. It was a goal of yours. Let's go. Would you like to do this? Tom Whitby, I had reached out to, and I love Tom. He's great. I had never met him in person, but we'd done podcasts for ASCD and other things. So I reached out to him, and it was great because he came back to me and said, would you mind if I co-authored with Steve Anderson? I'm like, hey, that's really good. I can handle that. You know, Kristen Swanson approached me and said, heard you've got a book series. I did something on EdCamp. So some of it, like, through the synergy of the people, it wasn't, make no mistake, this was not all about me. This was about me putting something in play and other people just majorly stepping up to the plate. And the first time we had a conference call, like we did a conference phone call, everybody just kind of meshed together, and it was funny and it was informative. And I thought, wow, we're really onto something. So as the ideas have grown, I really thought it was just going to be 6 ideas, and that's what it was. But it's actually grown to be, yeah, by the end, I think we're going to have about 20 books. And wow. So that's been really cool. Yeah, when I look on Twitter and I see people talking about it, it's weird because they're not talking about a book I wrote necessarily. They're talking about a book in a book series. And I'm just as proud because it's really cool to know that you were the starting point for that and see where this is going to go. And the idea that you're giving somebody their first opportunity to write a book and know that they might write 30, 40 books in their lifetime, it's just really awesome to know that they started with you. So it's just been a great experience all the way around. Corwin has been so awesome about it. I love working with Corwin.
So you kind of already mentioned the book that you first authored back in 2012, Dignity for All, Safeguarding LGBT Students. It's like, boom, here it is. This is my first book, and this is the topic that it's going to be about. Like, how did you go there first?
You know, I had done my doctoral work in that area. I wanted to see how well school administrators safeguarded LGBT students, and it was really a pain. I got booted out of some of the best schools in my area. They just did not want to be a part of the research. The Dignity for All Students Act was coming out in New York State in a year, so schools had to be prepared, and I thought, they don't even want to talk to me, and they're supposed to be prepared to actually safeguard students. At first, I didn't think it was a huge problem with the LGBT community, and then as time went on and the resistance I got, I realized how big a problem it was, which made me even more empowered to keep going. I think even when I was, the college that I was doing my doctoral work at, most of the people in my cohort got approval within a month, and it took me 5 months to get approval, and I was the first person to ever get a call in front of the Institutional Review Board. It was crazy, and I would say the more that happened, the more I just got really irritated and thought, I am so going to keep pushing this envelope. I had written about it, for EdWeek a little bit, because I think by the time the book came out, I had been writing for EdWeek for about maybe less than a year. But when I had always talked to Ernest Berkovs, he's a senior editor at Corwin, and we were talking about what a first book should be, and I said, I don't know if I want to write about being a principal because, quite frankly, anything I would write, Todd Whitaker's already written. And I had said that to him. And he said, so what was your doctoral work? And I said, safeguarding LGBT students. And he said, I think you just found your first book. And I didn't realize sort of what a big deal it was going to be. It was the first book ever on that topic that Corwin had published. And that would be the first time that I talked to Mike Soleil as well, because I had presented at ASCD in Philadelphia. And he introduced my book at an author event, and that was pretty awesome because it was the only book he talked about. Yeah. I felt really comfortable writing about the subject in general, because I'm fine with who I am, and I want kids who are marginalized to know that they've got people who care and are going to protect them. But I had also written about so many different topics with EdWeek that I felt like I wasn't going to get – I was worried about getting pigeonholed. Like, was I going to be the principal who was talking about LGBT topics all the time? And I really didn't have to worry about that because I had talked about so many different things. So, yeah, it was definitely – it was a great book. As I travel the country, sometimes it's interesting when people know your bio before you get there. And you realize that you're not always in friendly territory when they know that you write about safeguarding LGBT students. But honestly, I don't care. I can handle it wherever I am.
So you've also had the unique opportunity to go on NBC's Education Nation panel. How did that come about, and what was that experience like?
Somebody had put my name forward with the producers of NBC a couple of years ago, and they contacted me. We had like a 45-minute phone conversation. I had been doing, for the past about 7 years, I had been doing education segments for an NBC affiliate in Albany. So I was very comfortable on camera and those kind of things. And I had done some other interviews when I went to speak at conferences. But, I had a great time talking to the producers. It went back and forth. And honestly, I didn't think it was going to come together. And then probably late September... it was probably mid to late September, they contacted me and said, will you be on a school safety panel? And I said, yeah, that'd be awesome. So who am I going to be on with? And they said, well, Hoda Kotb is going to be the one doing the interview, and she's moderating, and Goldie Hawn is going to be on the panel. I was like, well, there's something I never thought I'd do in my life. Sit on a panel next to Goldie Hawn. That was kind of awesome. They brought me down in October, and I actually got to – I got invited to the mayor's mansion for a dinner the night before, so everybody from NBC was there. All the panelists were there. Brian Williams moderated. He was like the MC for the thing. It was awesome. And then it was good the next day to see, because Education Nation was getting criticized for not always having the right voices there. And the reality is there were a lot of different voices, a lot of people, against testing, for testing, against the Common Core, for Common Core. Not everybody got a chance to see that, but because I was there, I got a chance to see more of that, and that was good. But it was a great experience. I mean, just one of those things that you kind of walk away going, wow, I think I just really did that, and it was good. So, and the cool thing is I still keep in touch. The producers contact me every once in a while, so that's been really nice. It's all relationship building.
Cool. So, Peter, who inspires you?
Wow, that's a really great question. I was lucky when I was growing up. I had some really good coaches when I was a long distance runner. And then when I was doing my administration degree, there was this guy, Jim Butterworth, who ended up becoming my chair in the doctoral program. And Jim had been a superintendent. He was, a teacher and an administrator. Then he was a superintendent. And then the assistant commissioner for education in New York State. Jim is one of those guys that challenged me all the time. And when I did the doctoral program and he was my chair, he was the one who actually talked to me about doing safeguarding LGBT students. He definitely has inspired me. My partner, Doug, has been incredibly supportive, and it's not always easy. I mean, we've been together for 13 years, and there are things that, when you're saying, I'm going to leave a six-figure salary and go into this unknown thing, that's just not always easy, and he's been super supportive of that. And my family, my family's been, I was raised by my mom. My mom never remarried after my dad died when I was 11. And, my family and I, they just left, actually. We were having a gathering at our house. They have been really, really awesome. And not for nothing. Along the way, I think you just meet great people. My staff at Post and Kill always, we had a lot of dialogue. We didn't always see eye to eye, but they got me to stretch my thinking. They got me to become a better leader, and the students were just awesome. When you feel like you have it tough and then you go to see what some students are going through in life and they still come to school every day, you have to be inspired by them too.
So when you're having those really rough days, what do you do to recenter yourself?
I write. I usually go to the gym for a couple of hours. I always try to, even when I'm on the road, I try to start out with something very positive, elliptical machine, whatever, because that brings me some balance. But honestly, writing is something that I feel like I can close the door and I can write about whatever topic I want to. It doesn't necessarily mean I'm going to publish it on my blog, but it's something that, it's something that definitely helps me come back to center. Twitter, those kind of things, connecting with other people. I think there are key people in my life that I like to talk to when I'm having those kind of days as well. So there are a variety of tools, I think, that I have to be able to come back to center.
Looking back on your career, your teaching career specifically, if you could give yourself like maybe a piece of advice like early on in your career, what would you give? What advice would you give yourself?
That's a really good question. I think I worried all the time that I was just not doing the right things. Like the conversations I had during the day, I wasn't making a ton of money and I had put myself through college. So there were sleepless nights where how am I going to pay my bills kind of thing. There were a lot of those things. To be able to look back and say, if you knew that it was going to be okay, you probably would have slept more at night. Don't sweat the small stuff. Those kind of things are definitely important, because the big things I could always handle. It was the small stuff that would kill me. So I would probably just say, take a breather and don't worry so much, because you're on the right path. Follow your instincts, because your instincts have led you in a good place.
Well, Peter, one question that we always like to end on when we're doing our interviews is to ask our guests, what is something that you're really passionate about right now?
What am I passionate about right now? I am, from a work or a career standpoint, I'm just really passionate about being able to write about topics that are really affecting people. Like, I'm sick of the conversations about educational reform, and I'm tired of high-stakes testing and that kind of stuff. I'm passionate about the idea that getting the real story out about the hard work the teachers and school administrators are doing, because I don't think that our voices are heard enough. Because even in mainstream media, it's not sexy enough to just talk about education. You've got to talk about the dark side of education. So I'm really passionate about being able to write about those topics to get that story out, because I know some awesome teachers and administrators that are working hard, being very, very innovative, and I don't think they get the respect that they deserve. So putting that out there is definitely something that's important to me right now.
That's great. So, Peter, thanks for coming on tonight. I know you had a little fiesta at the house, and I appreciate you making some time for us tonight.
I wasn't drinking, just so you know. I get fully sober. It's all good.
Well, Todd and I are hammered, so no, that's not true.
It's 5:45 for me. Oh, it's look, it's after 6 o'clock. I can officially drink. So.
That's right. So how can listeners connect with you?
I'm at Peter M. DeWitt on Twitter. They can email me, pmdewitt518@gmail.com, or they can go to my website, just do a Google search for Peter DeWitt. But guys, thanks so much for having me on. I don't really feel like an edgy all-star, so I'm feeling a little bit humbled by all this.
No, you're doing great stuff. That's why we have people on, people who inspire us and who are doing awesome things for education.
That's exactly right. If you want to connect with us, you can find us at eduallstars.com. You can also search out EduAllStars on iTunes and find the old podcast episodes. We've got about 75 out there now.
And you can join us for our next episode as we interview the 2013 National Teacher of the Year, Jeff Charbonneau. So thanks again, Peter, for coming on. We really appreciate it.
Thanks, guys, for having me.